Kevin Lings is the chief economist at StanLib, one of the few economists who work very, very closely with the investment team. So I guess you could call him an investment economist. That's why he's the man we want to talk to about the latest big moves in the world, interest rates starting to come down again. Is that accurate, Kevin? Are you what we could describe as an investment economist, rather than these guys who stand up with PowerPoint presentations and kind of bore us to death?
Yeah, so most of the work is just focused on what does the economics mean for the world of investing? So that's the entire, emphasis is trying to take whatever develops in terms of economic growth, inflation, interest rates, and interpret that to what should we do in the markets and which market should we be in, which asset class should we be in. I don't generally get involved in particular equity selection. That's not my strength at all, but it's much more to do with asset classes and the world of investing.
We've been following very closely the movements in the United States on the interest rate decision that came out last night. It was bigger than anticipated, but perhaps you can just put in perspective, why is the rest of the world so interested in something that's happening so far away from us?
So over time, the world has become very integrated in a range of things, and financial markets are no exception. The world of finance is incredibly linked. And nowadays, I would probably say I spend more than half of my time analyzing the US versus, say, South Africa or Europe. It's that important. Most markets react to whatever develops in the United States. It's not just South Africa. It's a very much a global phenomenon. They are by far the biggest financial markets, the most liquid markets. They set the tone for most things in terms of currencies, inflation, growth, a whole range of things. So what we find in reality is whatever the US does is sort of filtered into the rest of the world. Obviously, China is growing in terms of its role in global markets, but because their financial markets are nowhere near as developed as you find in the US or Europe or actually in other jurisdictions, they're not playing that role. They play a bigger role when it comes to global growth, commodity prices, and some of the geopolitical events. So they are significant and you need to pay attention to that. But in terms of day-to-day movements, not really. Their economic data is not well developed. It's very patchy at best. It's not reliable. And so the markets don't fixate on whatever data China brings out. But when you look at the US, it's a huge fixation. And when you watching Jerome Powell do a press conference, it's literally a global event nowadays, and markets react immediately during that conference afterwards, and South African markets follow that. And for a lot of people, it sounds odd, right? Because you change in an interest rate in the US, what difference does it make to us? But capital flows are very much impacted by, to start with, what the US does, and then as a subset of that, what each country does individually.
David Bach and I on BizNews Briefing last night were talking about the commentary that came from our partners at Bloomberg, who said, it's going to happen at 2 o'clock this afternoon, but we're crossing live from 1:30. So it's a little bit like a preview to a rugby match, this FOMC meeting. Just to maybe unpack for us, most commentators felt that the interest rates would fall. It was that was known, but the extent of the fall at 50 basis points or 0.5% in kind of everyman terms, rather than 0.25% or 25 basis points, did seem to be higher than anticipated.
So if you look at what the Fed did, you would say that the expectation from economists was for 25. Bloomberg surveys about 100 economists ahead of the time, and pretty much 90% of that 100 expected only a 25 basis points cut. The fact that the Fed did 50 then obviously raises questions, and it does have an effect on the markets. And immediately you want to understand, why did they do so much? And what does that mean for the future interest rate outlook? So in terms of why did they cut 50, it seems clear that on reflection, what they're saying is they probably should have cut in July. If we look at the data that was around, if we look at particularly the labor market data, they claim they didn't have that at the time. It came out essentially the next day. And they arguing that it, had they had that data, they probably would have cut in July. So I think you've got to see the 50 basis points as partly just a catch-up. They should have started the rate cutting cycle earlier. They've realized that the economy has weakened appreciably since July. The labor market in particular has softened. The unemployment rate has moved up. Inflation has remained under control. And so when they look at it, they're saying to themselves, we're a bit behind. Now, they don't want to admit, no central bank wants to stand up and say, we are effectively behind the curve. We've made a mistake. We need to catch up. That's not great politics. So what they've tried to say is it's appropriate to cut 50, and we're still in very good shape. In essence, what they are messaging, that it's a catch-up, and then going forward, they are signaling ongoing interest rate cuts. But the thing to, I think, take away from this is don't expect that they're going to keep going at a 50 basis points or half a percent cut every time. They have tried to message that, yes, they started with half a percent, but going forward, it's more realistic to expect they cut at a quarter percent, and then they're going to be cutting regularly during the course of next year and the year after that. And at this stage, you would be looking at the U.S. taking the interest rate down to more or less 3% by the end of next year. So if you think they were sitting at 5.5% before this cut. They've taken it down half a percent, so they've already started. And then over the next 2 years, their plan at this stage would be to reduce that to 3%. Clearly, if the economy weakens substantially in the interim and it surprises on the downside, they'll just accelerate the interest rate cuts and you'll get to that 3% a lot quicker. Equally, if inflation starts to become a problem again, they'll slow down. But that's the general plan. And that's important because what it does is it tells all the other central banks around the world, this is what we intend to do. And most central banks will look at their own interest rate in relation to the U.S. And they don't want to be radically out of line. It doesn't mean you're going to follow whatever the U.S. does exactly. That's not the case. But you want to be mindful of where the U.S. is going. And you would be very aware that if you step way away from the U.S. trajectory, then you're going to face some risks, and those risks generally reveal themselves in currency. Right now, the Rand has done very well, and the reason partly is sentiment since the election has been better, but South Africa's been very conservative on interest rates, and so we are effectively reaping the reward for that conservatism. Now, clearly, the Reserve Bank is itself in an interest rate cutting cycle. So that will start to dissipate, and it will dissipate during the course of next year. So central banks, when they make a decision, they have to take into account what they think the gap between our interest rate and the US will be, and what might that mean for the currency. And so it's become a little bit of a complicated set of parameters you got to look at. You can't just look at South Africa specific factors. It's not as simple as that. And in fact, it goes further than that. When the Reserve Bank sets up their monetary policy meeting dates, they will only set that up once they know what the Federal Reserve's meeting dates are. So they get that information and then plan their own meetings to follow after when the U.S. has met. And so they do that on purpose, and many other central banks do that on purpose, so that you're getting the information as updated as possible from the United States before you make your own decision. It's become that integrated.
Sure, and that important. Today we have from South Africa and from the U.K., for instance, one day after Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, has given the U.S. direction. Kevin, on a more broad term, What is it likely, or what happens when interest rates fall to the value of equities on the one side, or share prices, and also to the currency on the other side? It'd be very interesting if you could unpack that for us.
So obviously, when the Fed cuts interest rates, what it tends to do is it will tend to weaken the US dollar, because obviously it's not as attractive to have your money in the United States as it did previously. And so money will move looking for another jurisdiction. It also then increases the possibilities of everybody cutting interest rates. And so you look for opportunities elsewhere in the world. So we call that risk on, where investors are now looking for jurisdictions that might be considered a bit riskier, say South Africa, where they're cutting interest rates. And because they're cutting interest rates, there are some potential growth opportunities elsewhere in the world. And so money moves around opportunistically. So in this instance, an interest rate cut in the US will tend to weaken the dollar and encourage money to move into emerging markets, which is exactly what happened. So the rand tends to then strengthen against the US dollar, but we're not alone. Many other emerging markets also strengthened. We were one of the better performers if you look on the day. There were emerging markets that didn't gain. And I think we are a better performer at the moment because of just an improved sentiment in South Africa post the election, and the fact that we have kept our interest rates reasonably elevated. So as a currency, we're doing well. Obviously, that will change if we extend our interest rate cuts more aggressively. So we start our interest rate cuts, and let's say that at some point we decide to accelerate that. Then presumably our currency would also come under pressure as money looks for an alternative destination. So interest rates make a big difference to the currency and the perception around the flow of money. In terms of other markets, generally, when you're cutting interest rates, the bond markets tend to do well. That would be your expectation. And so you find that as a country starts to anticipate cuts in rates or is in the process of cutting rates, their bond market tends to outperform. And if you look at the South African bond market, it's done well more recently. And part of that is the fact that we have started our rate cut cycle, and that the currency has been reasonably strong, which obviously helps the inflation rate. When it comes to equities, it depends on whether or not you think the interest rate cut is now going to boost economic growth, and whether that boost in economic growth is already captured in the equity market. Now, markets move well ahead of time. We know that they anticipate a lot of this. And so it's not a foregone conclusion that once you actually start the interest rate cut, that markets, that equity markets are going to outperform, because it's entirely feasible that they discounted all of that. And if you look last night, the S&P 500 actually declined, even though they cut more than expected. And part of that reason is it was already in the price. And so equity markets try and move well ahead and don't necessarily just react to the actual policy decision.
So as far as investors are concerned, generally, this is anticipated. All of the information is in the marketplace. Don't go buying or go selling or doing anything different. Just stick with the strategy that you have already, because there's no big surprise here, even though the interest rate cut was significantly higher than most expected.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, we certainly wouldn't be changing our investment profile because of, the Fed cutting 50 instead of 25. What we would do instead is have a look at what is the path of interest rates that the Fed is laying out. As I said previously, they expect to get to 3% by the end of next year. Is that path of interest rates radically different from what we had previously anticipated? And the answer is no, not really. Yes, they started a little bit faster than you would have expected, but the general trend is still more or less in line. the U.S. economy is expected to grow at a slightly slower pace during the course of next year, but not go into a recession. Inflation is expected to be under control, and that will all allow them to cut interest rates. That becomes the more important factor when it comes to the investment decision. So we would still be optimistic on global equities, particularly U.S. equities. Where we would be changing, though, is we would be switching into smaller companies as opposed to the large cap stocks. The large cap stocks have generally outperformed. Some of the IT stocks have outperformed. And part of that is understandable in an environment where interest rates are elevated. Smaller companies tend to struggle more with higher interest rates. Now that you've started to cut interest rates, it has a tendency to proportionately benefit smaller companies more. And they tend to have a bit more debt. They tend to respond better when you cut interest rates. And so they are considered a better valuation. They are, relatively speaking, in terms of a PE ratio, more palatable. And so what we've been doing is changing our portfolio and switching away from the top end, the large companies, into a broader range of smaller companies. And if you want to follow that, you would follow the Russell 2000, which is 2,000 companies. And that would include a huge amount of smaller companies where we think there right now is probably more value if you expect that these interest rate cuts will continue, which is our expectation.
And in South Africa, at our BizNews conference last week, we heard from Piet Viljoen and Sy Jacobs that they're both looking at small and medium companies in South Africa, which Piet says has been massively oversold and at the lowest level in many, many years. Would your strategy in the US also work here?
Yes. So we would have the same general view, is that that's where the value resides in South Africa, in more domestic stocks, and by almost by definition, those stocks tend to be smaller or mid-sized companies. The big companies tend to have, almost by definition, a big, large offshore part of their business. So yes, we see more value in domestic stocks, and some of those are small cap. Obviously, a lot of that will depend on each fund manager as to the size of their portfolio and how big the company is, and can they actually fit it into the portfolio. And so some of the smaller boutique asset managers have a benefit there because they can buy more easily into the smaller cap, and that can make a significant difference to their portfolio. But nevertheless, that's been our exact same trend in terms of how we positioned our equity exposure. And obviously, we need two things to happen, and that they're important. One is we do need the South African economy to perform better. And so this buy into cheaper South African stocks is a good strategy if the economy does better, if earnings grow and it all washes down to the bottom line, it would make a hell of a lot of good sense. And I think there's a good value there. The second thing that would help us enormously, if we start to see foreigners coming back into our market. Foreigners have been net sellers of South African equities every month for I can't remember how many months. They've tended to not like South Africa's story at all, no matter which segment you're looking at. What we need and would help us enormously is if some of this better sentiment in South Africa, a little bit, let's assume that it translates into better growth, that we start to see foreigners come into South African market looking for some of that same value. That would give us a very nice uplift. So that's our general positioning. And obviously, as we grow in confidence around the idea that South Africa can do better, then that positioning will become more aggressive. At this stage, you would have to say that we've got tentative signs of improvement. We've got a better sentiment. A lot of CEOs, when I chat to them, are expressing a better optimism, better sentiment. We think we've got better policy in place generally, but we've got a long way to go in terms of implementing some of these to make a meaningful difference to the actual economy. And so it's fragile. It's not 100% guaranteed that South Africa is going to be in better shape this time next year. Obviously, there is some of this that you can point to. The electricity situation, absolutely, that is better. But apart from that, it's a lot of hope. We hope Transnet gets better. We hope that the water system gets more actively investigated. We hope that the government of national unity sticks and holds as an entity. We need more conviction around that. And as we gain that conviction, I think there's a lot of value in South African assets. I think our assets are viewed as cheap, but they're only cheap if you can grow the top line or grow the economy. And that's the bit that you've got to be a bit hesitant about. Now, fund managers want to get ahead of all of this, right? They don't want to wait for the newspaper to tell you that South Africa's growing faster. They want to anticipate it and get into the market ahead of that. And that's where the risk lies.
Kevin Lings is the chief economist at Stanlib, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.